All right, here we are. Welcome back to Book Wave, the book club podcast. Back today for another wave cast. I'm your host, Scott, joined today, as usual, by Pat.
Yeah.
And Jason.
Beautiful day to be alive.
To start off this podcast, I'm just going to ask Pat what you've been reading lately. And let's discuss some books.
Well, one book that caught my interest was a book called Childhood Disrupted, How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology and How You Can Heal. And it's essentially about how we as adults end up becoming trapped by our own childhood adversity, which is essentially many of us go through trauma as a child, and whether it be, you know, emotional, verbal, sexual, physical, or dealing with parents who were divorced, alcoholics, manic depressives, bipolar, and everything like that, and how it eventually shapes our biology as we grow, and eventually we end up getting, you know, physical diseases like heart disease, stroke, early on, especially when we're young adults, we get that. And just finding ways to heal that process, and the way that it's described in the book is how you can heal is by essentially going back to your childhood, realizing that it's something that, you know, doesn't happen to you. I mean, it happens to millions of other people in the world. And just going back and understanding that it's not you anymore. You're not a part of that life anymore. And just bringing it to light. And that can be done through either, you know, therapy sessions, mindfulness meditation, hypnosis, and even finding ways to eating a proper diet and exercise. And eventually that will change your DNA as you age. So
yeah, it was called how Your Biology Becomes Your Biography.
How Your Biography Becomes Your Biology and okay. How You Can Heal.
Okay, kind of related to that, if you're familiar with Gabor Mate, he talks a lot about trauma relating to, like, addiction. He's an addiction specialist, so he studies that, and he makes the case that it's all connected to trauma rather than the actual substance that people claim is the biggest problem. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the book also brings up various examples of people who have gone through that, and there's even like a little survey at the beginning of the book called the ACE survey, which you can look up on the internet if you want to. It's essentially like a yes or no question, and depending on how many answers you get, how many yeses you get, determines how your longevity, or your, well, I should say, the way that the more you answer yes on the survey, the more damaged you are, essentially. Like if you scored like a 5 out of 10, you're most likely to, you know, get this kind of disease later in life, or you know, anything like that. And that also can lead to chronic stress and deregulation of your stress hormones, and inflammation can occur, and just, you know, just because of stress that you've dealt with as a child, really, that can affect you.
It's a lot of damage you can cause just by, you know, not dealing with your own baggage.
Yeah,
that, or not taking care of your basic necessity, staying hydrated, eating, you know, a well-rounded diet. But what I'm thinking about is kind of interesting, how, like, on a regular basis, our biology changes. Like on a month-to-month basis, our skin cells, our new skin cells, our fingernails grow. And then, like, on a yearly and decade basis, you know, like the cells of our liver, kidneys change. But like what doesn't change so much is our thoughts. It kind of reminds me of that philosophical exercise of the ship of Theseus, where right. our bodies are constantly changing and rotting, but being replaced by new cells. But the memories are still there, and we carry those memories from childhood, whether those be like traumatic memories or, you know, joyful memories. We carry those with us throughout our life.
Yeah, and in the same way that it's the ship of Theseus, like, you know how memories can change over time if you, like, don't deal with them, right? Like, keeping traumatic moments in the fog, like Jordan Peterson would say, can only make it worse. So, like, in that same analogy, you would have these traumatic memories, and over time, they would get traded in for more traumatic memories. Like, you would make it even worse for yourself. Like, if you remember that one chapter that Jordan Peterson has where he talks about the woman who was, like, she was abused when she was, like, 2 years old by someone who was 4 years old, and she just kept that traumatic experience, and she put herself in the body of that two-year-old every time. That four-year-old was always terrifying. So if you don't, like, revisit those moments, it gets bigger and bigger over time.
Yeah, and part of me wants to say, like, your thoughts don't really affect you. From, like, a Buddhist perspective, your thoughts don't really carry any karma to them. They're just, you know, thoughts. They're these energetic waves in your head. But then how do you keep a thought from turning into action? It's like a potential turning into kinetic. So your thought, if you're resentful, for example, of the world, you're gonna curse under your breath. You're gonna maybe frown and treat other people differently than if you were equanimous and joyful. But I guess what I'm trying to say is it's the quality of those thoughts. Like, if you don't pay attention to them, they'll come out as actions that you might not approve of.
Yeah, and just keeping it a secret for a long time makes it a whole lot worse for you as you age. And your reaction to that feeling stressed from that one traumatic event in your life is the most harmful. And essentially, we're often taught that this is kind of a societal norm, but we're often told that going through stress can help us toughen up, you know, go through it and everything. But really, it actually makes it a whole lot worse, because if the child is not going to get over toxic stressors, they're going to have a hard time developing their mindset later on. And there's even some science to back that up, really, where the child will eventually kind of, like, have a difficult time growing their frontal lobe, the frontal lobe of the brain and the hippocampus and everything like that, because there's nothing outside of whatever traumatic experience they've gone through that can take them out of it and just find a sense of peace or happiness from that. Instead, if they keep it up for very long, then they're going to have a hard time developing themselves when they turn into an adult.
Yeah, and you know, there's that old adage, like, hurt people hurt people. If you're abused when you're a kid, then that's all you really know as fatherhood or parenthood or whatever it is.
Right, well, you mentioned toxic stressors, and I'm thinking of, like, actual, you know, toxins, like arsenic or something. Your body just can't handle those unless you take little bits of it over time. You can grow, like, an immunity to it. But also there's the aspect of, like, the reaction to a stressor. So the stressor might be like somebody cutting you off in traffic. You know, is your reaction to that a toxic reaction? It doesn't have to be. What I'm trying to say is, like, I think inside of us, there's like an alchemical process where we can transform something like lead, which is toxic, into something that's golden.
True.
That's why you got to keep your diet clean. Keep that engine running smooth. Keep that alchemy going properly. You put too much sugar in there, it's like putting arsenic in your body, right?
Yep. What about you, Scott, or Jason?
The only thing I've really been reading lately is random comic books, so and the books that we've been reading for Bookwave. I have been watching a lot of videos about Friedrich Nietzsche, though. That's a rabbit hole. I think he's becoming one of my favorite philosophers. That will to power, I think there's something to it. Because I was watching one guy try to explain it, and like the German to English translation, like power, like the word that Nietzsche uses translates better to like will to create or inspire to create. Something like that. And it made me think of, you know, like John Vervaeke's definition of agape, because like you inspire someone and you create through love, you create another human being through love. It's like, maybe we're all misunderstanding Nietzsche. Maybe he was talking about agape all along. Because like he didn't exactly dislike Jesus. He only had a problem with the Christians that followed him. What do you guys think about that?
So I guess I'm still struggling to understand the concept of agape.
Yeah, it's actually a tough one to get into. Do you want to talk about that?
If I could try to summarize, is it just the love for something regardless of your hangups about it? Like, how is it different than like platonic love? Hmm. So I understand like eros, you know, the yeah. love between two people in an intimate way. And then the love between like brotherhood, like platonic.
Yeah. Like the brotherhood kind of love would be like what Vervaeke was describing as philia, I think. He's like, there's eros, philia, and agape. And agape is like that Christian love. I'm not going to be able to explain it with any sort of justice to it, but it's like the Christian love that Jesus showed to like the non-Christians, you know, like he forgave them. And like the word forgive is just to give before, like it's not to like forgive someone's crimes or anything like that. You're just giving them without, you know, getting anything first. You're just forgiving them and, you know, creating that bond through reaching out and loving, and you create like each other's personalities in life, I think, with that kind of love. Like if you and your best friend know each other for however many years, you're going to change each other. Like the more you know each other, and every conversation you have is going to affect how you develop. I think that's akin to what agape might be.
So like the kind of love somebody might have at Burning Man, who's taken ecstasy, and is like, I love you, man. That.
Yeah, man.
Similar.
I was just talking about this with Will before, like earlier today, and he was like, I was telling him about the last Jordan Peterson podcast I was watching with Andrew Schultz, and he was talking about going to Burning Man, and he's just like, man, I felt all this love, and for the first time ever, it was like my cup was full, and I could just give love to people. And have this transformative experience with everybody. Like, yes, that's agape.
I mean, I would imagine there's some aspect of that in a intimate relationship between people where they're not having sex, but they're also like caught up in this like magical head space, heart space. Right. I mean, there's got to be similarities between all of these different types of love.
Yeah, I think
crossover.
I think a good relationship would have to have elements of all three. Like, it would, like, in most cases start with eros, because, you know, that's like wanting to be one with somebody or wanting to be one with something. That's what the kind of love you use to describe for like sexual desire or, you know, eating chocolate cake.
Yeah, I can't imagine taking those kinds of drugs or going on a drug trip or anything like that.
You're just not open-minded enough, Pat. We'll go to Burning Man together, okay?
Let's all go to Burning Man.
Well, you mentioned comic books. I mean, just reading the same comic books or new comic books?
I've been going through an old series for Moon Knight just because I know they're making a series. I've always been a big West Coast Avengers fan, so I'm reading some Moon Knight comics.
I got a comic book question. Was Captain Marvel like an original hero or heroine in the comic world?
There's a lot of controversy with Captain Marvel. If we want to get into Captain Marvel, that's like an hour long podcast right there. But like it started like, you know, Shazam, like the Billy Batson character.
Yep.
He was originally called Captain Marvel in the comics. When he wasn't even created by Marvel or DC, but DC ended up, you know, getting the rights to him because they won a lawsuit saying that he was a ripoff of Superman or something silly. And but like everyone else also had a Captain Marvel character, like the original Captain Marvel that Marvel Comics or Atlas Comics made was a guy originally as well, and he died off in the comics and then was replaced by Miss Marvel, who elevated up to Captain Marvel. So okay. Like Miss Marvel was the female heroine, Carol Danvers. And like when DC got Captain Marvel, like the Shazam character, they had to change his name to Shazam, or they had to change the comic name to Shazam. But like, because Marvel Comics would own the name Captain Marvel. It's all a big, huge legal mess that's really convoluted, and yeah, it's strange. It's literally the reason why, like, that Shazam movie that DC released is called Shazam and not Captain Marvel. They're still allowed to call the character Captain Marvel in some cases, but just not on the title of any production. It's really, really strange.
It must be so excruciating to watch the Shazam movie and not think about the original Captain Marvel and, you know, the concepts that originated.
And the thing is, like, Shazam or Captain Marvel was outselling Superman, so everyone was like, oh, this is the new cooler Superman, and DC was like, nope, can't have that. So it was like a big, you can't have a superhero too. Like, oh, how times have changed. There's a Superman clone in every comic story that you read. Like, even The Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan is an analog for Superman if you look deep enough at it. But then there was like another comic released in the UK called Marvel Man, and it was basically a spoof of these characters in like, well, what if superheroes were actually real and they called it Marvel Man, like in the real world, and he was like a, yeah, it's like a emotional mess and everything like that. Like Alan Moore, he's a genius. Everything he writes is incredible. But when it was released in the U.S. and like everywhere else, that same lawsuit came into effect. Like, well, you can't call it Marvel Man. You have to call it Miracle Man. So Miracle Man in the U.S. is the same as Marvel Man in the U.K. So, you know, comics are weird.
True.
Yeah, I've been trying to keep up with podcasts lately, like the Jordan Peterson ones that have been coming out. He's been dropping one at least once a week. Have you guys noticed this trend, like from maybe 5 years ago, you might have had like a favorite podcast, and nowadays you might have like five favorite podcasts and you're unable to even keep up with them because there's so much content being produced. And heck, absolutely. I mean, we have our own podcast now.
yeah, it's kind of hard to promote your own podcast when like I can't even watch Paul Vanderclay. Like, I love that guy. I had him on our podcast and like I can't keep up with all of his content. I feel bad about it almost, you know.
I think when it comes to podcasting or creating a podcast, is I think you have to find your own niche and the niche that you're interested in. So that way you can dumb down, you know, the 1.4 million podcasts that are available on the net and just kind of dumb it down a little bit. And sometimes it can be a bit redundant because some of them say the same thing or mention the same thing. But, you know, if you dig a bit deeper and find some, then you might, you know, find something that's worth entertaining, really.
Yeah. Like, I find it hard, too, because, like, at the same time, I'm trying to be more efficient with my time, and I'm not very efficient when I'm just listening to podcasts, so. I usually just, what? Like, start cycling between them. Like, I'll go through phases. Like, I'm just going to be watching, you know, just Jocko for a week, and then I'll go through a week. I'll just only watch comedy podcasts, you know. What's the harm in that? I'll just get some work done painting Warhammer miniatures with a podcast in the background. Something to laugh at.
Yeah, that's an interesting strategy. I should try that, because I used to listen to a lot of Joe Rogan when I would go on, like, a drive, right, along commute. But lately, I haven't been, since he transitioned to Spotify, I haven't really
listened to him. Yeah, that was, like, weird. I didn't really intend to stop listening to Joe Rogan. It was just, oh, I watch all my podcasts on YouTube, and now he's not here anymore. So now it's a whole other step to get to him when I could just, you know, click on Lex Fridman.
I rarely listen to podcasts unless, you know, something interests me or if it's something that I can just waste time with, like Joe Rogan talking to Tom Segura, you know, in case I have a good laugh. And then there's been podcasts that have been relating to writing and publishing, which I'll get into. And then just, that's pretty much it. It's kind of an odd phase, and I don't know if it's just me, but, you know, like you said before, there's a ton of podcasts and there's, you know, so many niches that it's really hard to actually, you know, get into one because there's so many. It's like the equivalent of, you know, picking through your favorite Netflix show or Hulu show or figure out which one is trendy, and there's like hundreds of different shows to pick from, and you don't know which one to pick. It gets overwhelming.
Yeah, I go through a little bit of a crisis every time I finish a show, you know?
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'll just like I usually watch like an episode or two of some anime before I go to bed just to unwind, just to, you know, laugh, flashing colors and then meditate and then go to sleep. I don't know. It works for me, I guess, but like if I finish an anime and then like I don't have anything else to watch, but I have a watch list like 20 to 30 like shows long. Like I know I want to watch all of these, but I'll just go weeks without picking any of them and just staying on YouTube for the whole night.
Well, yeah, there's like an infinite amount of content on YouTube, but it's interesting we call them podcasts because it's kind of based on the Apple iPod, which
Yeah.
I don't have an Apple iPod, but we still call them podcasts. And
Yeah.
radio shows, I would consider those to be essentially the original podcast, air quotes, podcast. Like, there was this one I listened to. It's called Car Talk. It was like these two guys talking about fixing cars. And it was on the
Yeah.
air for probably like 20 plus years. I remember when one of the guys died, and it was kind of like a tough thing to let go of. But what was y'all's like first podcast that you can remember listening to?
For me, it was probably Joe Rogan. But it's funny that you compare it to radio, because I was thinking about that song the other day. Like, Video Killed the Radio Star, and now podcasting is radio killing the video star again, getting his revenge. But at the same time, there's a video element to podcasting too, so I don't
Well, that's
know.
because everybody wants to have a conversation about something. And now, with the advancement of the internet, anyone can do it. Like we're doing.
Yeah.
My first podcast was Rooster Teeth because I was
Oh,
a
yeah.
fan of their work and everything. And I went to their conventions twice in my life until they started going off the deep end and I stopped caring. But yeah, that was my first podcast. And I used to listen to a lot of radio mostly because I would, it's kind of like, it's kind of like Howard Stern, where you're always interested in knowing what's going on in the office and what everybody's up to, and just listening to those silly fights and conversations about what people did over the weekend or what trips they've gone to, and just cursing each other out. Those were, back in the day, they were fun, and everybody got into it. And slowly but surely, podcasts came along, and then it kind of shifted.
Yeah, Howard Stern kind of had that drama element, talking about things that you weren't supposed to say on the radio, and he would get fined and kind of hold his middle finger up to the FDA. And then I think he even made a movie at some point. He was pretty big for a while. I don't know if he still actually is on the air or
He
what.
still
He's
is.
still doing it. Okay.
Still doing it.
Huh.
And then, of course, there's Loveline, Dr. Drew.
Do you think?
Doesn't Dr. Drew have like a thing with Tom Segura nowadays?
Yeah, he's partnered with them.
Yeah.
He has his own podcast, Dr. Drew After Dark.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those. They're pretty funny or they're pretty gross, one or the other. What were you
Pretty
gonna say,
gnarly
Jason?
too.
I cut you off.
Oh no, I was just thinking, like, is the amount of content a symptom of the internet because we can all have our own voice, or is it like a symptom of this meaning crisis that John Vervaeke talks about? A lot of people feel a lack of purpose, so that catalyzes them to want to, start a discussion.
I think you can see a little bit of a crisis going on with self-help, because everybody has their own way of living their lives. And just pointing out, you know, toxic stuff in life to avoid. And they're just going on about it, you know, explaining their perspective of it. And the more perspectives you get from these self-help podcasters, you know, the greater the crisis can be for some people, because, you know, everybody's different and it's hard to pick which one you want to listen to the most, I would say. And the other way of how this media is growing is because a lot of people have different ideas they like to share, like, you know, sharing media, like reacting to media or something, like having a podcast and then having two people react to something on the internet or talking about, you know, whatever it is, as usual. But then again, it kind of goes back to what I mentioned, is it's just finding a niche and establishing it and making it your own. And then when you let that grow, eventually you'll find your audience and they will come back to you day to day to day. So yeah, like for us, I mean, we are young men just reading books, getting back into reading books for the, you know, and just understanding what we're reading and what impact does it have on us and possibly millions and millions of other young people.
I appreciate you letting me fall into that category of young.
You look young. That's what counts. You're young at heart.
Very deep to think about.
Yeah, I see Scott is lost in thought. Recently, I've been going back and reading like parts of Genesis. I find it very fascinating that a lot of medieval artists use stories from Genesis as their muse for a painting. Like, for example, there's this one portrait in the Jordan Peterson novel. It's called The Temptation of Saint Anthony. And this is like a very famous painting that it's not in the Bible, but there is another painting from the Bible. It's called Joseph and Plutarch's wife or something like that. Huh. It's that story about like this captain of a Pharaoh and his wife like grab Joseph's cloak and have sex with him.
Huh.
It became a very famous, and there's just so much stuff in that one, in that first chapter of the Bible. Even though I'm not a religious person, like the aspect of Rachel and Jacob like using mandrake root, it's not, you know, really elaborated on, but it's in there. It's like, I don't know, some kind of witchcraft.
Yeah.
That one Saint Anthony painting is in Jordan's new book, in one of the rules.
Right. Yeah. So all of the paintings or sketches in his new book, they're custom made interpretations of great art.
Yeah, and rule number one is a tarot card, the Fool. And like, if you look at all the tarot cards, like there's a lot of them that have some biblical inspiration to them. Like there's one that has like the two pillars, like the Joshin and Boaz, like the two pillars of the Temple of Solomon. So it's pretty neat once you get into it. Yeah, it's right there.
How did you get into tarot, Scott? Were you like always into this?
Well, I've already mentioned Alan Moore this podcast, so I'll have to mention him again. There's a graphic novel called Promethea. There's a lot of tarot symbology to it, and so it got me kind of interested in like the Hermetic order, and I just loved like researching history and everything related to that too. So once I got into the history of tarot cards, it's like, oh, like 52 card regular bicycle deck. That comes from tarot card. The suits are just changed over from swords, cups, wands, and pentacles to clubs, spades, diamonds, and hearts. So like the connection is there. And then I started researching the artist of all of the cards, Pamela Coleman Smith, and you know, I'm always a sucker for a good story about an artist. You know, that's why I'm part of why I'm such a big comic fan, so but like yeah, the story behind Pamela Coleman Smith, that's pretty crazy. She was like a black woman that was born in England, but then moved to Jamaica and then moved to America, and then she got involved in the Order of the Golden Dawn with like, she actually illustrated one of Bram Stoker's novels. So that's really cool. And she had this condition where like when she heard music, she would see colors and shapes, and then that's how she would paint a lot of her art. So she would just paint what she saw when she heard beautiful music and stuff like that. And then she put all of that symbology into the cards.
Yeah, I think they call that synesthesia. But I didn't know it was the same artist that did like all the different cards.
Yeah. And like I was looking at the cards, and like every single one of them has like a little symbol in the corner, and I recognize that right away. I'm like, oh, that's an artist's signature. It's her initials. It's like it's the P, and then like the first, like the top half of it is a C, and then there is an S. So it looks like just like a snake crawling up a stick, but it's actually just a P C S, Pamela Coleman Smith. Like, I've read enough comics, I've seen enough artist signatures to know that, like, I know what you're doing there.
So, like, in my mind, I kind of always associated tarot with, like, astrology, but in your understanding, are they completely different things?
Well, you can never really fully separate them, but it's not the part of it that I'm super interested in. But the more that I play around with these, and the more I try to do like I've been doing readings for a bunch of my friends just to be like, come on, let me practice on you. I'm trying to learn the cards. And like every time it's been like weird. I won't go into too many details on the podcast, but it's like, okay, this is describing your exact situation. And like I've done it a couple times for myself when I was reading and researching about how to use tarot for the art of storytelling. So I was like, okay, I'll try that. I'll throw three cards on the table, and I literally saw the story that I was currently writing for this comic book that I'm working on. It's just like, okay, what is going on here? Is this magic? Are the muses playing with me right now? Are they playing a little game?
But see, like, for me, I wasn't really into tarot cards until I've learned what their purpose was from a movie that I saw and a video game franchise that I played. And that movie that I watched was Knight of Cups, and it follows a screenwriter throughout Los Angeles, and he's going through this journey, this self-discovery journey that's loosely based on the Pilgrim's Progress, which is a Christian allegory. And the tarot cards represent the relationship the main character has with a person in the film. Like, one of them represents the moon, one of them represents the hermit, the hanged man, judgment, and all that. And there's not a whole lot of dialogue, but you can see it visually. The script was basically improvised, and you know, they just let the actors play out whatever role they wanted to play based on what Terrence Malick did, the director of that, and just follow through. And the video game, of course, is Persona.
Right. Like, that's kind of funny. Like, we were talking about my indecisiveness of watching anime and everything. The last one that I started watching that I've been watching has been JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And this has been like a really weird synchronicity for me too, because I bought this tarot deck in like the same week that I started watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And then when I started like really researching it, it got to season 2. And at the point when you're at season 2, it introduces all of these like spirits or whatever. They're called stands, and they're each modeled after one of the major arcana in the tarot deck. So it's like, okay, I literally just put myself in a position where I would know what Hierophant meant. And now I just got to this part in the anime where it's talking about the Hierophant and the magician. I was like, okay, are these tarot cards? And in the next episode, it's like, oh, by the way, all of these are modeled after tarot cards. So just a weird synchronicity there.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of like the Platonic idea in Plato's Republic. He talks about the fates, how they have a spindle of necessity that weaves the web of the universe, almost as if there's a pattern of reality that we somehow follow, and that pattern is, or could be described mathematically by kind of like the golden ratios. Like if you could see the pattern, it would be like this beautiful thing. And it just kind of guides us through life. Of course, another part of me thinks that there is no destiny and fate. So I don't know. Weird character.
Yeah, but it's interesting to picture it.
Yeah, for me, it's just a question. And I could quote Jack Kirby, like, if I died tomorrow, and, you know, what I would say to God would be, the questions have been terrific, you know? Like, that's what's worth living for. It's all the questions. Is fate real? Is anything actually happening when you're invoking the muses and fiddling with a tarot deck and shuffling it around?
I mean, sometimes it feels that way. Like the other weekend, my wife and I met up with her sister at a park. It was a really busy park. You know, lots of tourists are there. We show up. I'm thinking, no way we're going to get a parking spot because every parking spot's taken. And as we're rolling through the very front of this park, one car leaves. I pull in. And then my sister-in-law is coming like behind us. And then the person right behind me pulls out and leaves too. So she pulls in right behind, you know, right there. And it's like, we got the best two parking spots in the whole place. Are the gods like doing this, or what's going on?
When I was in college, I had a friend who had a catchphrase that always inspired me. He always used to say, "The universe provides." And like, that's always stuck with me. Like, he'd say it in the most like ridiculous of situations. Like, he'd be just like leaving my apartment with like a couple things in his hand, like a couple Xbox controllers or whatever. It's like, "You have like a bag or something I could put these in?" And like, there'd be like one hanging off the back of the door. He'd be like, "Ah, the universe provides." And then he'd just be on his way. Like, ah, what a great outlook on life.
Yeah, it's like, ask and you shall receive. Well, maybe that's a good good spot that we can wrap this up.
Yeah, that's a good call. That was a good little conversation there.
Hey, the universe provides, so.
The universe provides. And you know, if you're new around here and you haven't checked out our website at bookwave.club, you should do that. And we just opened up a brand new Discord server, so make sure you check out the Bookwave guest server and hang out with all of our loyal fans and followers in there. We're on Anchor, we're on YouTube. Like, comment, subscribe, share with all your friends and family, and may the Force be with you.
Or equal to mass times acceleration, as Will will say.
Don't let the bastards grind you down.